Good morning and welcome to episode 19 of our live Q&A with Sinton's Wills, Trust and Estates team. I'm delighted to be joined by Edward Patterson again this morning. Ed is a trainee solicitor in the Wills, Trust and Estates team here at Sinton's. And as per usual, we will take you through three questions that have been sent in to us here at Sinton's. So without any further delay, Ed, good morning and over to you.
Yeah, thanks Pete. So we've got our first question. And that reads, can I place conditions on my young grandchildren for when they receive gifts in my will? So, yeah, it's a good question. You know, when you're making a will and you're benefiting people who are relatively young, such as your grandchildren, then you should always consider whether you wish to make an outright gift or a contingent gift. So when you make an outright gift, it imposes no conditions. And the beneficiary will be immediately entitled to your gift by just outliving you. So it's quite a blunt way of putting it, but that's just the way it is. So for example, in a hypothetical scenario, you give £10,000 to your granddaughter. If she is over 18 when you die, then she'll receive the gift straight away. If she's under 18, then the £10,000 will be held on a bare trust for her. Until her 18th birthday. So unless your will provides otherwise, then your granddaughter's parents or guardians, they can give a good receipt and will hold the gift as bare trustees until she's 18. So what that means is that they're just looking after the gift for her. If she dies under age 18, then the money will form part of her estate. Now, on the other hand, a contingent gift imposes conditions that must be satisfied before they're given to the beneficiary. So the most common contingency is basically requiring the beneficiary to reach a certain age. So for example, and just using that same example that I gave before, you could say, I give £10,000 to my granddaughter upon reaching the age of 25. So in this scenario, only if your granddaughter reaches 25 will she be entitled to that £10,000. If she's under 25 when you die, then the money will be held on trust until she reaches 25. So as I say, that's what I've just mentioned before. Her parents or guardians could just hold that money for her benefit until she reaches 25. If she was to die under the age of 25, then her estate will not be entitled to the cash and it will instead pass to whoever else you've put in your will that will be entitled to that gift in default. Okay. If you haven't expressed anyone to receive that gift in default, then it'll just go with the residue of your estate. And, you know, as I say, imposing an age contingency, it's something we see in practice quite often. It's something that people like to look into because, you know, there's some people on one hand who are very happy for their younger ones to receive a gift as soon as they hit 18. You know, they're totally fine with that. But on the other hand, if you want to be a bit more protective, you might be thinking, you know, let's just wait until they've finished uni, they've done their gap year, they've got out the phase where they love driving fast cars and whatnot, and wait until they're a little bit older and hopefully can handle their money a bit better, and then they can have the money then. So it's up to you really, but it's worth looking into. And as I say, it's something we see quite commonly in practice. Okay. We've got our second question as well. So this reads, what does it mean when a gift lapses in a will? So when people say a gift has lapsed in a will, what it means is that a beneficiary in your will has predeceased you and is not able to take your gift. So the gift will normally fail and it will pass with the residue of your estate unless your will provides for a substitute beneficiary. Okay. There is a section of the Wills Act, and it's section 33, provides an exemption to the gift lapsing. And it essentially says that if you've made a will and a gift to your child or remote descendant fails because they've predeceased you, but that child has left their own children living when you die, then those children can take their parents' gift. So I'll just put this into an example so it just makes a bit more sense. And again, it's not the best example. It's not the most happy example. But say you've left £10,000 to your son and he's sadly predeceased you, but he's left his own living children, then those children, you know, could take your son's gift. The thing is with the Wills Act, it's and Section 33, you know, you can exclude it by saying something to the contrary in your will. And it's usually best practice just to include a substitute provision for a beneficiary in your will rather than just relying on the Act. Because as I say, if you can just put that substitution in yourself, it just makes things much more clear, much more set in stone, rather than just relying on the Act to kick in when you die. So, you know, you can just put in your will, if, you know, my son predeceased me, then I would like, you know, my daughter to receive his share or something like that. It's people's preference as to who the substitute would be. Okay. And one more thing to bear in mind is, you know, if it, there's another section to the Act, Section 33A, and this is a bit of a funny section, but it essentially says that if a person entitled under a will disclaims their entitlement or forfeits it by killing the person who made the will, then their threat in the purposes of inheritance as dying immediately before the person who made the will. So just to give an example, and again, this is quite a crazy example, but if you were given an inheritance under someone's will and you killed them, then you would be treated as immediately dying before them, so you wouldn't get that gift. And I think that goes without saying, you know, if someone had made you a gift and you killed them, it would be a bit odd if you ended up inheriting from their estate. So again, that's just why it's been put in there. But just to cap it off, you know, if you don't want your gift to trickle down your beneficiary's family, then it's always good just to state exactly what you want to do with that gift and just future-proof your will. Okay. So the last question we've got is, what is the residence nil rate band? So you've got your nil rate band of £325,000. The residence nil rate band is an additional benefit of £175,000 on top of your nil rate band. And you can claim it in certain circumstances. So like the nil rate band as well, the estate of the surviving spouse or civil partner can claim any percentage unused on the death of the first. So just to give an example, you know, with the nil rate band, if you've got your wife and she's sadly predeceased you, but she hasn't used some of her nil rate band, then you can, you know, use that percentage in yours. And again, the same applies to the residence nil rate band. Okay. You've got to bear in mind, though, there are some limitations to this additional residence nil rate band. So if your estate is worth more than 2 million, and for some people that's amazing, wow, you've got 2 million in your estate, that's great. It might not be good for the residence nil rate band, because essentially a tapered reduction will apply to the residence nil rate band, and that's £1 for every £2 over the 2 million threshold you're at. So again, you might want to think about that if you've got quite a large estate. It's going to be a tapered reduction there. So in terms of where the residence nil rate band applies, because you might be thinking, how do I use this? So it applies only where residence or an interest in a residence is inherited by lineal descendants. So by lineal descendants, it will mean, you know, your children. OK. And a residence is defined as a dwelling which has been your residence at some time during the time that you've owned it. So as you might be able to tell, there's no requirement that it has to be your main residence or even a UK property, although I will preface that by saying that to qualify, your residence needs to be subject to UK inheritance tax. So on that basis, you know, a holiday home could qualify theoretically. However, if you've had a property that was, you know, never your home to begin with, you know, such as a buy-to-let property, then that's not going to qualify. So it needs to be, you know, a property that's been your residence at some point whilst you've owned it. Okay, so I'll just give an example just to line that out. So if you've had to leave your home to go into care and, you know, your children rent out your home to pay for those care fees, you know, and this is quite a good example to use because this is something that might happen. If you die and you're leaving the house to your children, but it's now being let, the residence nil rate band is theoretically available for that. You know, you're not living in it anymore, but you did used to live in it whilst you owned it. So it can still qualify theoretically. Okay. There are other limitations to consider as well. You know, I've spoken about the tapered reduction. The residence nil rate band is also capped at the value of the residence, and it's limited to one property. So you can't go claiming this on, you know, your portfolio of properties that you've lived in time to time. It has to be one property, and it's capped to the value of that. So if your property was worth 500 grand, you're not going to be able to claim that 500 grand. It's going to be 175,000. Okay. So in terms of how that works, you know, and where you've got more than one residence inherited under your will, you know, you need to choose which one to claim the residence nil rate band on. And this will be, you know, after you die. So, you know, you want to make the best choice. You know, if you've got one that's worth less and one that is worth more than the residence nil rate band available, it's usually best to choose the one that's worth more, just so you're maxing out the nil rate band that you're claiming. And if both are worth more than the residence nil rate band, you know, of £175,000, then it doesn't really matter which one you choose because you're maxing it out anyways. So that's just something to bear in mind. And, you know, it's a good thing to consider because it can raise, you know, your nil rate band from £325,000 up to £500,000. And that can make such a difference. So it's a good little handy exemption that you can use and look into. And it's something that a lot of people are not really aware of. Everyone's quite aware of the nil rate band, but the residence nil rate band, some people, you know, can get caught out by that. So just have a look into that and how it might apply. All right. So thanks again for all your questions. You know, it's always good answering these. And we had some really good ones today. So as I say, you know, we'll see you next month and I'll pass you back to Pete.
Thanks, Ed. We continue to work hard to release relevant content, article, podcasts and blogs, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk. You can also follow the team on Twitter at SintonsPC. If you have any question following today's Q&A, you can contact Ed on 0191 226 7878 or alternatively via email edward.patterson@sintons.co.uk. So thank you very much for listening and we hope to see you next time.